A heads up before I begin. Today I'm going to talk about violence against women. If that is a topic that is too close to home for you today, that is too painful for you, please take care of yourself. Go outside and enjoy the sun, go down to the fellowship hall and have coffee. But if you do, do so knowing that there's nothing that you have ever done, nothing that you ever could have done to deserve the pain that you have suffered, nothing. And I hope that you'll come back for our prayer and for our song and for this community of healing, peace, and love. So let's all of us do a little seventh inning stretch. Let's everyone stand up together in case someone does want to leave so she can do so unselfconsciously. Seriously, let's all stand up and stretch for a moment. Arms up, wiggle around, light yoga. Oh, you guys are so good. Thanks. Thank you. Just keep going if you need to, that's fine. Our bodies need it. Today we are in Athens. Paul has left Philippi. He's left Philippi to continue nurturing feasting communities, to continue sharing his love of God and God's love of all people everywhere. So he's gone about another 400 miles, which puts him at least 1,800 miles just in the 2 weeks we've studied him. That's over 500 hours of walking because of his love of God and God's love of all people. The Athenians were well known for their curiosity and their intellectual exploration. So it's no surprise that in Athens he encounters all kinds of people to talk with and to debate with. Everyday Joes and followers of specific philosophical schools. While he's standing there at the Areopagus, also known as City Hall, so not as glamorous or mysterious as it might sound, he's at the Areopagus. He references an altar in the city, an altar that is labeled to an unknown God. Well, God's not unknown, Paul says. God's not unknown. God is the God of Genesis. A God that is known and knowable, a God that we must know by virtue of our very existence. Look at us here today. We know God because we're here today. And that God is just waiting for us to turn our attention again to God, to return our attention to God so that we might at last fulfill the potential that God has gifted all of us with. Humanity, we people, we really struggle to believe that all humans have received gifts from God and that all humans are beloved of God. In the weeks since we were in this space last, all manner of horrible things have happened in the world. The one I want to address today happened in Toronto, my dad's hometown. 10 people were killed and at least 15 injured because a man drove a van into them. He just plowed them down with a van. Sadly, this is a somewhat unremarkable event. Motor vehicles as murder weapons, it's becoming increasingly common. And that death toll and level of injury isn't nearly as severe as other terroristic events just in this last year. But this particular crime and this particular criminal brings to light again an insidious and odious ideology being promoted online. In it, groups of men who are not sexually active rail against men who are sexually active and the women who are denying them. In these communities, These men encourage each other to castrate sexually active men and to rape women, among other things. Within this online space, the Toronto van driver has been praised as a saint. At the heart of their ideology is an entitlement to women's bodies. These men, and it's only men promulgating these ideas, are angry because they haven't gotten what they feel is rightly theirs. Female bodies. Which is not original. Men have felt entitled to women's bodies since women have existed. What is distinct in Toronto is the weaponization of that hate and the application of that weapon in such a broad and random way. This is not an obsessed stalker going after one specific woman. This isn't an ex-husband who kills an ex-wife. This is a collective of men who are so obsessed with sex, so obsessed with the lack of sex in their lives, so unwilling to confront why that might be because of their own behavior, that they blame for what they call their involuntary celibacy. They blame all women for that state. So the death of any women will do. Now, our own ideology, right? Religious practices include ideology. Our own ideology is not free of vicious misogyny, right? We just need to open the Bible. The townspeople, they're banging on your door. They want to attack your guests. Send out your daughters to be raped instead. That's the story of Sodom. You've had to wait decades to have a baby and you're impatient? Rape your slave. That's Abraham and Hagar. But really, from the very beginning, women have been nothing but trouble for men. Just look at how that Eve tricked Adam into eating the forbidden fruit. Or not. No, let's not give that lie of an interpretation any more credence. But let's go to Eden. Let's follow Paul's suggestion to look at the God of Genesis. Recall that Genesis is not a biology textbook. It is a theological reflection on the relationship between divinity and the world. So everything that I'm going to say is metaphor. In the beginning, in Eden, God created this queer being, the Adam, A-D-A-M, not capital A, A-D-A-M, this Adam. The Adam is queer in the beginning because it's unique. It is unusual in its configuration among all of creation. The Adam is queer too because within it exists all manner and all potential of future human gender, sexual, racial, and physical expression. It's all there in the Adam. And so into this queer being, the Adam, God breathes the breath of life. God then invites the Adam to split into two. God invites the Adam to be the very first chromosomal pair. And so we have male, and so we have female. And we know now that that was just the first division, because biology is not nearly as binary as a lot of people would like to believe. And things were good. Things were good in the garden. And then they weren't. One day, another God-created creature comes up to the humans. Another God-born resident of the garden comes to the humans and invites the female to eat the pomegranate. And she does. She invites the male to eat the pomegranate. He does. They hear God coming to them through the garden, and they are filled with shame for what they have done. God learns of it. God banishes them. In their banishment, the humans together create new lives themselves. They have sons. One of those sons grows up to kill the other son. It's a mess. Our story about the relationship between humanity and holiness begins in perfect equality and unity, but quickly becomes a mess because of forces beyond us that we can't resist, immaturity that we can't conquer, and emotions that we can't control. Outside forces we can't resist, immaturity we can't conquer, and emotions we can't control. Sounds like the internet. It sounds like the internet. But it doesn't have to. That's the message of Genesis. This life, this world together doesn't have to feel and sound and taste and hate and kill the way Adam, Eve, Cain, and Abel did. There doesn't have to be male supremacy and all of the other hierarchies of hate. Adam blamed Eve for what he did. He didn't have to. He could have taken responsibility for his own actions. Cain is desperately jealous of Abel. And God says to Cain, "Why are you so angry? Sin is lurking at your door. It is desirous of you, but you must master it." If only Cain had not let that beast through, he could have saved his brother, its rage. But going back further, Eve and Adam could have remembered that they were never alone in the garden. The story says that it's only after they have the fruit that they become aware of God coming toward them. Well, that makes it sound like God is just another supernatural being out there rather than the literally universal life force. Since that can't be the case, the story must be telling us that in the time that they were distracted by the snake, they completely forgot about God. In that moment, their senses were so narrowed down that they became unaware of the constant presence of God, the same constant presence of God that Paul preached about at the Areopagus, the same God that is known and knowable, the same God waiting for us to return our attention and to live into the potential with which we are all gifted. The genius of the book of Genesis is not its biology or its geology, but the accuracy of its depiction of the human condition. We blame, we get jealous, we kill. Look at Toronto. But that story is grounded in perfect unity. Whatever else is in the Bible that we need to banish from being taught as religious truth, in the beginning, we were one, we were equal, we had unity. That's what we need to teach our children. That's what we need to remind ourselves of each other. No one is entitled to anybody but their own and should not listen to anyone who says differently. We need to spread that message. Spread that message in the name of the God of Genesis with as much fervor and intensity as all of the people online combined. Paul walked thousands of miles in what I can only imagine were flip-flops, right? He didn't have sensible shoes. He walked thousands of miles out of love of God and God's love for all people. Imagine what we can do with our sensible shoes and the internet. Before I end, if there is anyone in here, male or female, trans, cisgendered, queer, anyone who has been hurt, who has been physically violated, and needs someone to talk to, you can talk to me, You can talk to Pastor Hannah. If anyone in here right now is enduring physical violence in your home, your school, your workplace, do tell me, do tell Pastor Hannah. Rest assured, together we will get you free. As for the rest of us, let us not be distracted. Let us not be distracted. Let us join the real saints in light, out in the public square, at City Hall, in our schools, in our workplaces, in our families, spreading the good news that we are equal, that in God we are equal, and in God we can again be one. That is the human story. That is the human song. Amen.